Hello and welcome to True Crime Medieval, A Thousand Years of People Behaving Badly. I'm Anne Brannan and I am your host in Albuquerque.
And I'm Michelle Butler in Tuscaloosa.
And today we are recording our special April Fool's Day episode. For April Fools, we like to talk about things that didn't really happen. And, you know, so we had the shame flute last year, I believe that was. And at one point we did the Droit de Seigneur because that never did exist. But today we're doing chastity belts because we've been looking forward to this, haven't we, Michelle?
Oh, yeah. This is a big one. This is a big myth that, you know, if you run into people who think they've heard something about the Middle Ages, you will constantly run into the chastity belt. I blame Woody Allen, personally.
See, I always blame Walter Scott for anything and then find out later if it's true or not. He's just my go-to person to blame. But I don't think he's to blame for the chastity belts. You're going to tell us more about that later. Up until fairly recently, the existence of chastity belts wasn't really questioned. Fairly recently, in the popular imagination, scholars had different things to say. Michelle's going to tell us all about that. But in the popular imagination, the chastity belts obviously unquestionably existed, especially if there were medieval knights who were going to go on crusade and they had to lock their women up in these chastity belts so that the women would not sleep around. And so that's what they did. And for some reason or other, a lot of people just said, oh, okay, and believed this, even though it basically makes no sense. It's not just that it didn't happen. It doesn't make any damn sense, but there you go. Because, you know, it's the Middle Ages, and people have been, for a long time, willing to believe just pretty much any kind of nonsense about the Middle Ages that they can think up. As, for instance, in the Middle Ages, they used an enormous number of spices so that they could eat rotten meat, which doesn't really make a lot of sense, does it? Because rotten meat isn't a thing you eat, is it? You know, and we're all here, and people of Europe survived. Any rate, that kind of thing. Chastity belts, they didn't happen. If you go and you like Google chastity belts, websites will often be saying things like they were probably a legend, and then go on to talk about the first users of chastity belts are considered to be the Crusader Knights. You know, so they talk about them. They say they probably were a myth, but then they go on to talk about them as if they were not a myth, you know, or claim them to you as if they were actually there. And of course, it makes sense because they were barbaric, weren't they? A barbaric method of controlling women's sexuality. Obviously, they did this in the Middle Ages. Obviously. Of course, they would have invented this kind of thing. And so Michelle's going to tell you all about this later. But the professor who wrote the main book that she's going to be using on the myth of the chastity belt said, as a medievalist, one day I thought, I cannot stand this anymore. And so then he went and wrote the book. And thank you for writing the book. But the way that we talk about chastity belts now is to say these probably never existed and then specify what they weren't while we're talking about what they didn't do. And what that means is that all the time that we are talking about them not existing, we are visualizing them and reinforcing the Crusader Knight and his hapless wife story because we keep making the picture of it in our collective mind. Even while we're saying, they weren't really there and this is what they weren't doing. There weren't any Crusader Knights. Wife, stay at home. We say that. There's an answer your question kind of site that I was looking at that there's a user wrote in and questioned how medieval women were able to urinate and defecate whilst wearing the chastity belts. You know, this is one of your first clues that there's probably something wrong with the entire idea. And the expert, I'm putting this in quotation marks, the expert that answers this says that chastity belts had holes in them for those purposes and then sends this user to Wikipedia, which is going to first call this use of them in the Middle Ages a modern myth, and then explain them, their use in the Renaissance, and how they can be modified, you know, so that you could actually wear them for at least short periods of time. So in other words, even though we know this is a myth, we keep talking about them as if they had not been a myth. They're not a myth now, they actually exist, and I'm going to be talking about that later. But we talk about them all the time as if they did while we say they didn't. In brief, it's pretty clear to most people that the chastity belt owned by crusaders was a myth. Certainly, if you Google chastity belts, that's what you find out. You find out Myth, probably not true myth, but here's what I'm noting. Again and again, we still like to talk in popular discourse about them as a medieval phenomenon, not as a reality, but as a joke. That's what they existed as, a joke in the Middle Ages. But it's an obsession for us. It's an obsession for us that this is how the medieval people thought, especially the Crusaders, because they were like all full of power, you know, and they were doing bad things anyway. They were going and, you know, trying to do things over in a land that really did not belong to them. But it's not the Middle Ages that was obsessed with chastity belts. It's us. We're the ones who are obsessed with chastity belts. And we have been really for quite some time. So the medieval chastity belts is another example of the ways in which modern culture projects back out onto the medieval past ideas of barbarity and ignorance that, you know, they don't have anything to do with the Dark Ages, which is that time in between the fall of Rome and the Enlightenment. These are both times of intellectual rigor and logic, and they disappeared. And everybody in the middle, this Dark Age, they believed in magic rather than observable consequences. They were really, really mean to each other, unlike the Romans and the modern people, because, you know, we never believe stupid things that don't have any evidence, and we certainly don't commit atrocities or genocide, do we? Because it's not the Dark Ages now. Can't be, because we got light. Do I have an attitude about this? Yes, I do.
Yeah, yes, we're so good.
Well, we've got an attitude. Therefore, of course, none of us would ever lock anybody up in a chastity belt. Ha ha. Except, of course, you know, atrocities, genocide, they exist. They existed then, they exist now. And chastity belts do too, because once having invented them as a medieval phenomenon, we had to construct them. So Michelle's going to walk you through the evidence and the scholarly theories. She told me she's going to do the scholarly theories in some kind of concise manner. I don't know what that means, because I know Michelle and she has a lot of things to say about how people are talking about scholarship. And then I'm going to come back and I'm going to discuss chastity belts nowadays in case you would like to buy one. Michelle, what you got?
So I just want to state up front that there is no debate about this. These things did not exist. We know for certain there is no ambiguity. There's no place for argument. I just cannot be clear enough about this.
They did not exist in the Middle Ages.
You know, it is absolutely not true that when husbands left, even a small percentage of them in the Middle Ages.
Even Simon de Montfort.
There is absolutely not a shred of evidence that a man ever had metal underwear made for his wife, clapped it on her, and then left for months at a time.
Never.
And we absolutely know that if somebody had tried that, she would die.
Yeah. They're not healthy things.
She would be dead. Within 2 months.
Oh, is it 2 months? I didn't know how long it would be.
She would be dead because of infection. It's just not possible to create something like this and not end up with cross-contamination. You would have fecal things making their way. You would just die.
It's worse made with iron than it would be later with stainless steel. Because iron's going to like rust and stuff and corrode really quickly.
Oh my God. Yeah, no, it's not cool. And it is intriguing how, as you say, you know, people acknowledge this when they talk about it and then pivot to saying, but here are all the ways that it could have existed.
And here's what it looks like if we did, and you can buy mine for $150.
The scholar that I'm working with here, the book's called The Medieval Chastity Belt, A Myth-Making Process. And that's important. He's talking about both why it didn't exist and how the myth came into being and why it persists. He is interested in both pieces of this. He's interested in how this has taken on a life of its own and is so hard to root out.
Yeah. I read something that there's this idea that in the Renaissance, they started padding them. So, you know, that was a little better.
Here's what I have for you. I want to tell you where it was published because that matters. It matters that this is a, you know, well-respected scholarly book. It's not some kind of wild thing. The author is Albrecht Classen. It is a volume in Palgrave's The New Middle Ages series, which is edited by Bonnie Wheeler. And the book is from 2007.
Okay. So not too long ago.
No, not too long ago.
There was one before that in 1931, right? The author of that didn't have as much evidence available.
Goodness gracious. And cites things that he should know better than to be claiming that they mean what he's claiming they mean. But that particular book is hugely influential in establishing the myth in the...
The one from 1931?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. Claussen's book is kind of like trying to hold back Niagara Falls with...
A bucket.
Yeah. Stop.
No, you're wrong. Go the other way. Everybody's falling off in their barrels. Mm-hmm.
So some of the things that he cites, he explains how the evidence that is usually cited by people claiming that chastity belts existed, he explains what it is and then why it doesn't mean what they're claiming it means.
Mm-hmm.
So for example, in medieval literature, belts are often used as love tokens or as icons of courtly love. So they have a metaphoric quality to them. So for example, one of the ones that always shows up as the first example of a reference to chastity belts is Marie de France in Guillemard, and it, of course, this is the 12th century. What happens in here is that there is these two young lovers. She has a husband, but she doesn't. It's always this older husband, young wife thing that people are so anxious about. And the young lovers get together. So, A, if there was a chastity belt in here, it didn't work. But there isn't. They get together, but her husband is going to be moving her elsewhere. So they exchange tokens. She ties a special knot in his shirt tail and he gives her a belt so that they will be able to recognize each other because they're expecting to be apart for a while.
Right. Okay.
So it gets cited, but it's not that. It's
like just something around her waist. It's not like mm-hmm. going, you know, through her, under her crotch. And
no.
Yeah. Okay.
No.
Yeah.
This is absolutely one of my favorite ones. Dietrich von der Gleis Der Bort, which is from the 13th century, in which, in this romance, I love this romance, a wife accepts an indecent proposal from a mysterious knight. One night with her, and he will give her all of his goods that he has with him.
Mm-hmm.
A magical belt, marvelous dogs, and hunting hawks. And she really wants...
Oh, I want the dogs!
She really wants these things for her husband. She wants to be able to give him these things to help him advance his knightly career. So she agrees. Unfortunately, a servant sees and tells the husband, who freaks out. He's all sad and he takes off. The wife waits around 2 years for him to come back, you know.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
He doesn't. So she disguises herself as a man and goes looking for him. Wearing the magical belt, she jousts and wins against everybody, including him.
Oh, I like this belt.
It's the magical belt of awesomeness where, you know, you win it and you can't be defeated. The husband, not recognizing her, befriends her and is like, you got the best stuff. Can I buy some of this stuff from you? And she's like, well... Yes, but I have a condition. And she offers him the same bargain that she agreed to get the things from the knight. But of course, she's dressed as a man, right? So this happens a lot in medieval literature, that they're kind of flirting with this homoerotic tension. He agrees. Of course he does. And she reveals herself, and I'm sure there's an awkward conversation.
Oh, probably not, because it's medieval literature. Probably it goes like this. Oh, there you are. How glad I am to find you. Yes, I too. And
so this also, while an awesome, wonderful story, is not having anything to do with the chastity belt. This is an awesome belt of magicalness that allows you to not be defeated. It's exactly the same as what shows up in Arthurian texts where Arthur has Excalibur and the sheath.
Why would you think it was a chastity belt? That doesn't make any sense. There's nothing in there that says, "Oh, this must be a chastity belt."
No, well, yes, I agree with you, but apparently people went looking for anywhere that the word belt shows up in medieval literature and went, "Aha,
I see."
This is actually really common in medieval, particularly, you know, from the 12th century on in romances, that you have belts as tokens of affection. This is not a huge leap, right? Because it is down around your waist. So it's a way of talking about your body and talking about the body without being too explicit, but it's not a chastity belt. It's a way of talking about attraction and talking about desire without being overly explicit. The same thing happens with keys.
Yes, because the chastity belts supposedly have to have a key so that you can get in and out of them. And the knight has the key, which he takes to the Holy Land and then does not lose while he is storming the walls of Jerusalem. Who? Amazing story. Amazing.
Yes. So there's a whole lot of poems and stories and romances in which keys are also used as metaphors for attraction and desire and frequently consummation. This is a fairly obvious analogy. You got a key, it's the same sort of thinking that gives us the Romance of the Rose, where you have the secret garden, but reading it later, wanting to find, the chastity belt thing is a good example of you find what you're looking for.
Mm-hmm. You know it's there, and so you just interpret everything that you see as being it.
Yeah. So you have things like, I'm going to open up the book here and turn to one of these. I don't think I need to give you all of these, but because there are a whole bunch of them.
Give us your faves.
Yeah. There are a number of these. So for example, this, you are mine, I am yours, you can be certain of that. You are locked up in my heart. Lost is the little key. You have to stay therein forever. This is not a chastity belt. This is the analogy of the heart being a lock and the key and, you know, and sometimes they're more explicitly an analogy for sex, obviously. But it's not anything to do with chastity belts, despite having been cited many times. The first source for something that is actually the concept of a chastity belt, so here we are, yay, is Conrad Kaiser's Bella Fortis, which is from 1405. It is a late medieval handbook of military technology.
Aha, and chastity belts are surely important in this. Oh, well, yeah, because Crusades, obviously.
So the thing is, it's like a medieval travel narrative in that you have things that are real and things that are fantastical in here. And part of the fun for the original audience is that they know which is which.
So they actually, if you're reading a travel narrative, they actually know that probably there's not people in a different distant country that go around with their feet on their head.
Yes.
Fair enough. Fair enough.
But this is the earliest illustration of a chastity belt. There is a picture, and it's attributed to the Florentines, which is an interesting piece of the development of the concept of the chastity belt. It's like the Droit des Seigneurs in that nobody is saying, we do this here. They're saying, those people over there did this.
Right. Much as we do with the Middle Ages.
Yes. The Germans say, the Italians invented this. And the Italians say the Syrians invented this. So everybody is pointing over there. So I'm going to quote a little bit here for you. Typical for his time, Kaiser enjoyed projecting a kind of aura surrounding his work, which includes a number of highly fanciful objects, recipes for magical operations, making a person invisible or invulnerable, and he added several comical comments and images of obviously dreamed up gadgets. For existence, the explanation concerning the floating belt emphasizes that the best method to inflate this belt would be to utilize the wind coming from behind, i.e. fart. So the chastity belt that he gives a loving illustration of is in no way the only thing in here that is fanciful. There's a whole bunch of them, including a castration machine.
Uh-huh. Why do you need a castration machine? Is it for your enemies when you catch them?
It doesn't necessarily explain why you would use one. It just explains how it would work.
In case you needed it. Okay, fair enough. I can't imagine.
In case you needed this. The thing is, it is absolutely, positively the case that this chastity belt, which he gives in detail, is a joke. It has no openings.
So it's even worse than the ones we've imagined.
Yes, indeed. So this one is one in which, again, if you're just going and reading something out of context, it looks like it's meaningful. But when you put it back in its context, you realize you're dealing with, you know, pieces of this are in fact realistic warfare. And then you have these other ones that are joke machines, like the castration machine. I find it fascinating that nobody cites the castration machine as a real thing that existed.
Oh, that's lovely, isn't it?
Even though, you know, this description is pretty detailed, right? Take this tearing instrument made of strong leather tightly into your hand, whereas the iron hook is to be put around the well-known body part so that it fits well on it. Then tightly wrap the middle belt around your arm and pull as hard as you can. Pay attention to place your foot against the foot of the man who is to be castrated. His testicles will come off immediately. So it's very, very detailed.
Yes, it is. And it's really silly and it's never going to be useful.
And it's thinking through, you know, like if you were actually going to do this, how would you do it? But it's not real. And nobody cites it as real. Like that says a lot about us.
Yeah, chastity belts, obviously real. Castration machines, oh, of course not. That makes sense.
Of course not. Of course not. In a similar time period, the monk and humanist Rutger von Speynhelm, he's giving a report about Benedictine abbot and historian Johannes Trithemus, who is also known for his account of Faustus, which is interesting. So Speynhelm is quoting the other historian. So again, we have this, you know, friend of a friend. He describes a male chastity belt used to punish monks and priests who are caught having sex with women.
Uh-huh.
This also does not get cited as if it were real. Isn't that interesting? It's also described in detail, but it's not real.
It's not real. Let's talk about it as if it was.
I have never once run into anything that claims that the castration machine or the male chastity belt is real. Not once. In fact, I had never heard of either one of those before. In the 15th and 16th century, in literature, chastity belts start showing up as satire. Not very often, but as an offshoot of existing literary themes of jealous husbands and anxiety about impotent old men trying and failing to control young wives. So it doesn't show up real, real often, but there are a couple. One is Sir Compy has a collection of novellas. And I think we actually have run into this guy before because I think we cited one of the novellas when we were talking about the sumptuary laws. And he had a very, very tongue-in-cheek discussion of why the sumptuary laws don't work, that the people trying to enforce them go up to a woman on the street and say, why are you wearing that? And she's like, that's not that. That's his other thing. And tells him it's a made-up animal. So it's very easy to subvert them. Well, in one of his stories, he tells, and this is fictional. It's very clearly fictional. All the readers know that it's fiction, but it's a satire. The Venetian textile maker Marco de Castillo has lots and lots and lots of relationships with wives before he himself marries. This is important. And then once he marries, he realizes he could be on the other end of this now, and he has a chastity belt made and puts it on his wife. Okay. But she dies.
Does the chastity belt kill her?
Yes. She dies from wearing it.
There you are. It's an actual real one then.
Sir Campy thought this through. He remarries. And the second wife's parents are like, what are you doing? He killed the first wife with one. And she is like, I got a plan. Don't worry. She arranges to have a friend there with her, and B, to be standing in front of a window when he's trying to put this on her. She says she's going to agree to it, but when he actually tries to do it, she motions to her friend, her may actually be a boyfriend, and the two of them throw the husband out the window.
Oh, that makes sense.
And he died. And the thing is, everybody agrees that he deserved it.
Yeah, I'm not sorry.
Here's a quote. Marco is condemned as a sadistic, jealous, and foolish husband who deserved to die. His stuff goes to the second wife. The second wife and the lover leave town and live comfortably elsewhere. And the second wife's parents manage the property. So the moral of the story is that was a dumb idea and you deserved what happened to you. Jealous husband. Then he cites a couple of 15th century ones that actually people haven't found and don't cite, but then he gives it up. He gives us these examples, but these next two are not cited by people wanting to argue that the chastity belt existed, probably because they're, you know, obviously dumb. They're so obviously satire, or they just didn't find it. Who knows? So one is by an author named Antonio Coronoso from 1484. This husband, in this story, the husband, of course, has a young wife and he's a merchant. He has to travel a lot. This is the one that says these things were invented in Syria because, of course, this is an Italian author. So he has this great idea that because he has to travel all the time, he's going to commission a chastity belt. He's heard of these things. And the young wife says to him, there's just one problem. You're going away for months and I'm pregnant. How am I supposed to have this baby?
Good point.
And he says, oh, you're right. And so what he does is he hangs a cross. He puts a belt on her and then hangs a cross so it would be hanging down in front. And he thinks that this will be a solution. Because any good Christian man who is thinking about committing adultery with her would totally stop.
Obviously. Oh, yeah.
Obviously.
Nobody ever murders anybody in a church either. It's...
And then he goes off on his trip and he explains to the other people on the ship with him, you know, the fellow travelers, what he's done. And his friends tell him, that's not going to work. The quote from the poem is, or from the story is, we would all of us pass through the cross to wait upon the Madonna. And then he's like, oh my God. He has to hurry home because he's like, I've made it worse. That makes people more likely. So he has to rush home and then he has to give up and just decide, I'm just going to have to trust my wife.
What a concept.
Yeah. So this one is great, right? Because it's making fun of the ludicrousness of this. It's just not good. He's adult. And then there's a medieval Welsh.
Oh, is there really?
Yes, there totally is. This is written by Hewell, H-Y-W-E-L, Howell of Bwlch, and it is a parody of a request poem. A young man, this one is very interesting, a young man asks a blacksmith to make a chastity belt that he is going to somehow put on a girl that he's courting because there's a second suitor. So this one is very interesting because he actually isn't this girl's boyfriend. He's not an accepted suitor. He's not a husband. It's very interested in the violence of it. And it also it's also a way to describe her body in a way that is supposedly allowable. But it's not about love. It's not about jealousy. It's about competition with that other man. And the story is not endorsing this. So according to our author, what we can prove is that male fantasy, I'm quoting now, male fantasy was certainly occupied with the idea of the chastity belt at least since the 15th century. So we can prove that.
Yes, that existed.
Okay. We cannot prove that they ever actually existed. We can prove that they occupy a space in the imagination. And that's interesting because that is exactly like Drôle de Seigneur. The late Middle Ages invents this concept and then freaks out about it.
The Drôle de Seigneur, we have to explain that just in case anybody's listening who isn't familiar with it.
So that was what we did for April Fool's 2 years ago, because last year we did the Shame Flute, also doesn't exist. Drôle de Seigneur, you start seeing in the late 15th century laws being passed outlawing it. So there's knowledge of it as a concept. That is the idea that the Lord has the right to sleep with a woman on her wedding night, that she gets the first night, the Lord's night. But there's no evidence that this was ever actually a real thing, but there is evidence that there was anxiety about it towards the late Middle Ages. There is a specific Duke of Padua, Francesco II. He's a 14th century duke. He is the last independent ruler of Padua. He often, frequently, all over the place, gets cited as the inventor of the chastity belt.
Really?
He shows up as getting cited, and that's really fascinating, right? This often happens when you're trying to make things sound more credible that are actually bunk. You give more specific detail trying to make it into a... Because if this was a real thing, first of all, if it was a real thing that they were using in the Crusades, this late 14th, early 15th century Duke of Padua is not going to be the inventor of it. He's 200 years too late. But you can make a bunk thing sound more real by attaching this person whose name, who he didn't actually exist. He was a real person and he was really executed by the Venetians, but he wasn't executed because he treated the women in his life so badly and slapped chastity belts on his wife and all of his concubines, which is what later people claim.
It's also a really good use of a concessive argument. You know, it is true that these did not exist in the early Middle Ages, but...
But we all know about the sex drives of the Italians. We're not even surprised that they have to slap these things on their women. Like, the amount of ethnic bias that is involved in this is interesting.
Nobody ever says the English made it up, did they?
No, this never gets attributed to the English. It gets attributed to the Italians. And the Italians, it's like what a French kiss is called. Other places, it's called other things. Or how the English referred to STDs as the French disease. It's those people over there, they're the horny ones. It's not us. My author goes through all of the chronicles, the contemporary chronicles. And of course, there is no contemporary evidence that Francesco had anything to do that he was either a pervert or did terrible things to his wives, or there's just no evidence for it. There's no evidence. But he's still cited as the inventor of the chastity belt, because what happens is that people start citing each other. I found the same thing with the shame flute, that people are pointing at each other and not a real kind of source. And that happens before the internet as well. It's a thing that we find on the internet, but most of the development of the myth of the chastity belt happens well before the internet's a thing. And it still is this shallow pool of sources that cite each other.
The internet made it easier and quicker.
Klassen points out, while conceding that you know, absence of evidence is not evidence of absence, but if chastity belts existed, would Chaucer have been able to resist mentioning them?
No, Chaucer would have had to talk about them.
Chaucer.
There would have been a whole story.
Oh my God. It would have shown up in, if it was a real thing, it would have been in the Canterbury Tales, and it absolutely would have been in the one with Nicholas and...
Miller's Tale.
The Miller's Tale. I mean, it's right there. It's right there.
It's right there. Mm-hmm. Yeah. The wife of Bath might have been interested in it too.
Yeah, the wife of Bath. but it's not there. So you know, with the caveat that that is not, you know, a conclusive argument, it's certainly a suggestive one. All of this silence from Chaucer, from Boccaccio, from people who you really would have expected to mention it if it was a thing floating around, a real thing floating around. And he hilariously tells us that certainly most pornographic collection of late medieval poems in Latin composed by Antonia Beccadilli, known under the sobriquet Antonio Panormita, has absolutely no mention of a chastity belt. So this is 15th century erotic poems, and the only time it mentions a key is when you have a husband trying to make sure that his wine cellar is kept safe. There's no, it's again one of these places he's citing, like, you know, this would have been low-hanging fruit for this guy if it had existed. Mm-hmm. It barely shows up in 18th century erotic images, which I thought is interesting. There's only a couple times it shows up. Okay, so where the heck did this myth come from? It comes from a couple things. There is a misunderstanding by later scholars of allegorical and metaphorical uses. There is a piece in the Bible where Paul talks about putting on the full armor of God. And this gets, you know, so the breastplate of righteousness, and that gets amplified by medieval theologians. And there is, in some of these places, a discussion of the girdle of chastity. It's a metaphor. But I think this is one of the ways in which, you know, how you and I have always talked about that you can't understand medieval literature without also being a historian. It really doesn't make sense to be a medieval literature scholar without also being a historian, because if you can't put things in context, you can't make sense of them. And this is like example, you know, this is a exemplar of that. If you're not aware of how that's being used as an extended metaphor, it really, really looks like they're saying girdle. The girdle of chastity sounds like kind of a straightforward thing. The kind of chivalric poetry that we talked about earlier with Marie de France, etc. The use of the belt as a romantic item is everywhere. It's in Sir Gawain and the Green Knight. It's all over the place. It's in the Nibelungen Lied. It's everywhere. But it's not an actual thing. Well, it is a thing, but it's not a chastity belt. It's being used as a metaphor for the relationship. And then we had the social satire, where in the later Middle Ages, in the late Middle Ages, people are saying, well, what if it actually existed? Well, you would look dumb, is what would happen. You would look stupid, and you would deserve it. Another cause, from the Enlightenment on, you have profound bias about the past.
Well, a particular past, because they like the Romans and the Greeks.
Yes. The assumption is that the medieval is barbarous. And the people who end up inventing and then perpetuating the myth, they're not medievalists. They're not experts in the field. What they are anthropologists or ethnologists or people who are trying to write about the history of sexuality. Even 20th century feminist scholarship has inadvertently perpetuated this myth. Mm. Because it comes into it with a set of assumptions and then finds things to support those assumptions. Another thing that happens, though, is that if you're an anthropologist or if you're somebody trying to write the history of sexual practice, there are actually practices to attempting to control sexuality that did and do exist.
Sure.
Female genital mutilation, castration, infibulation. That's fascinating. Infibulation is hard. It's hard to understand whether and how much that might have existed. There are places where it's described as somebody has punched a hole through the labia on both sides and stuck a padlock through it. Mm-hmm. I have my doubts about that ever happened. But there does seem to be some evidence that male slaves were sometimes, infibulation was practiced on them by puncturing the foreskin and soldering a ring in there. And certainly masturbation devices existed. One of the things that we know for certain is that more than one of the items, the devices that are supposedly chastity belts, are actually 19th century masturbation devices. The 19th century America loses its mind over masturbation.
This continues for quite some time.
Lordy pie. Circumcision becomes popular in the U.S. because there's a belief that it will keep boys from masturbating.
And the thing is, masturbation makes you insane, and also there's some moral thing to it.
So I have a little bit more sympathy for scholars who come in with this context, misunderstanding chastity belts, because they kind of fit in things that are known to have existed. But what's truly, truly worrisome from my point of view is how difficult / impossible it's turning out to be to dislodge this myth. He cites examples from 1997, 1998, and 2004, where it's just being repeated as fact.
That's amazing.
That they existed. We should know better by now. But one of the points he's making, why the book is called A Myth-Making Process, is that once these things get established, it's very, very difficult to provide a corrective.
The picture is just too clear and too satisfying.
And it's like the shame flute in that people have created fake objects that then supposedly demonstrate that these things existed.
Yep. You can go to the museums and see them still. A lot of them have been taken out, but some of them have been left there with little parts saying probably not existing.
Yeah. And really, one of the lessons to take from this is if you're in Europe and you see a sign for a medieval torture museum, don't bother. Practically everything you're going to see is you're learning a lot about the 19th century and not so much about the Middle Ages.
They can be fun, though. I mean, if you want to go have fun, then you can do that. But if you want to go learn about the Middle Ages, they're no use to you.
Because it's a lot more about the 19th century's neuroses than the medieval. So that is what I have. We have this disturbing myth that has become deeply, deeply embedded in our culture. Go team.
It's a lovely myth. And it's such a lovely myth that we have to keep repeating it. And now we need to be able to purchase these things. And so I will explain chastity belts nowadays. What's going on? I was going to talk about the chastity belts and chastity devices that were to help you if you were having a problem with masturbation in the 19th century and on. That's how long this stuff lasted. So you could buy them and you didn't wear them for long periods of time. So therefore you didn't actually die from them. So they're not going to kill you from sepsis, but you could buy these things and of different sorts up until about just before World War II.
I didn't know that it was that late. I think of those as being 19th century items. So that's really interesting.
Yes, it is. Yes, it is. And I hope I found some more stuff that you don't know about too. We'll see. I tried. God knows I tried. So chastity belts nowadays. As I said earlier, the 19th century, this continued about to the Second World War. You could buy various contraptions for women and for men to save you from masturbation. And these days, you can buy display chastity belts, ones that are supposed to look like medieval chastity belts. To buy these things, you need to go to like the stores and the online stores and companies that are making like replicas of medieval swords or chainmail or dresses or something. You can sometimes buy fake medieval chastity belts for display. For about $150, you can get one that you can display or you can wear it, although it doesn't have a lock. And so, you know, it's just for show. But the high majority of chastity belts these days are sold not for display as fake artifacts, but as sex toys. That's mostly what they're being sold for. And if you go to Amazon to look for chastity belts, and I want to tell you that it is only my dedication to true crime medieval and to fully knowing things and to telling true things that has caused me to go to Amazon and type in chastity belts, because now for a while, this is all going to show up on, you know, that little police website related to things you have searched for or things you are interested in or have viewed. So along with the cranium embroidery and the parrot stands and the dog treats and the women with ADHD books, there's going to be examples of chastity belts. This is going to go on for a while. I did this for you. I did this for y'all. Just saying.
Yeah, I'm not going to do that.
Yeah, don't do that. Although it really, I must say, it's very interesting. most of the devices that show up there are for men. So they're chastity cages.
Whoa, plot twist.
Honey, have I got plot twist for you. So the straps needed to keep them on, or like they can be leather. And the cages are like, the metal is stainless steel, which doesn't corrode like iron does. And you can also use various kinds of plastics, including silicone. So one of the ways in which technology has made such devices much safer. Yay. One of the varieties of the chastity cage that I saw is made out of stainless steel mesh, and it really looks a lot like chainmail, which I think is quite nice. I think that's a good move. And that only runs for about $50, which seems to me to be a bargain. And then there's some that you can have a little, like, slight, not giant, electric shocks. So they'll be like...
Wait. Do you do that to yourself, or is your... So I guess one of the questions I have about these is this something that you're buying for yourself, or are you playing with this with a partner? What's the...
Both.
Oh, interesting.
You could do either one. It really would depend on what your particular desire was and how it worked. I saw one, it's like it's mostly silicone, and then there's some bits of metal, obviously, which you need for the electric shocks. And that's running about $60. The ones for women are like leather and silicone mostly, and they'll be little metal parts because you need like the locks and, you know, buckles and stuff. Now, one of them, there's one of the women chastity belts. It's only about $10. It's a real bargain. And it says that the contraption of leather and metal chains is the ultimate in seduction. And so the opposite of what chastity belts were doing, isn't that lovely? This chastity belt will get you excited rather than, you know, keeping you from masturbating or keeping you from doing anything while the night is gone. I just love the way this is completely like shifted. There's this change in the whole meaning, and not just the purpose, but the whole meaning of chastity belts. Anyway, and it has an ergonomic design, which they say is delicate, refreshing, and breathable. So it's really, you know, it's not going to cause you health problems. They don't say how long you can wear it, but apparently it's not going to kill you. So that's nice.
So it's still called a chastity belt, but you're wearing Absolutely. It for arousal.
Yes.
Fascinating.
Yes. And the chastity cages, that's what they're called.
Wow. You
really. The idea is in there. There's an idea in there still of a boundary, you know, someplace that one cannot go until allowed to, or until one goes over the boundary. There's still some idea of containment of something. It just works differently.
Fascinating.
I know. I love the humans. They're too much. And so in a side note, because I was finding all this stuff, it was really affordable. And I thought, well, how expensive does this get? And so I went, you know, you can change on Amazon, do these, like how many stars, you know, customer reviews, or like do this low price to high. So I did high price to low. And the one that I found that was the most expensive is about $900. Why is this so expensive? And I'm not really sure. It has a lot of accoutrement, I will tell you, because you can have these things that do more. You can have these devices that do way more than just one thing. They can have multi-purposes, which I myself personally will not go into, but I think you can all imagine them. So the belt part's silicone, and it says you can wear it a really long time. So that's interesting to me, because one of the problems with the older chastity belts that didn't exist would have been that you would have died from them had you worn them for a long time, which you didn't because they weren't there, but you would have. But at any rate, you can wear it a long time. Also, you can get it in pink or black or blue, and you can get custom size. So at any rate, I think that's why it's $900. Yes. There's another wrinkle to all this, because there's such a thing as anti-rape chastity belts.
Oh.
The company is ARware, and they just had a GoFundMe sort of thing, or a community funding thing, and they got enough money. They haven't started selling them yet, but apparently they're going to be. What they're making is boy shorts for women that lock, and they're made out of uncuttable but comfortable material. They have an informative video online. If you want to look them up, you can go see this video. I really did a lot of research, Michelle. I'm just telling you.
You kind of switched roles for this one.
I know. I was really happy about this.
You went off and did the rabbit
hole. I did not do a rabbit hole. This was my topic. Nothing side here. This is, I'm on it. Anyway, it explains everything. You can't purchase them yet, but there's a lot of controversy about them already because to wear these means that women are in charge of not getting raped rather than focusing on rapists. Why don't you just not do that, you dumbasses? So it skews the power issues. So that is very interesting to me, but they haven't happened yet. But there's really a lot of controversy.
That is interesting because some of the people that Clausen cites float the idea that, well, maybe these things existed, but women wore them when they were traveling as protection.
Yeah.
You know, so they kind of float the idea that, well, maybe they were anti-rape devices. You know, the other thing, I did forget to mention one thing that is quite hilarious. There was a grave discovered in 1899.
Oh, I remember this, yes.
Yes.
Tell the story.
Were you going to? Okay.
It wasn't on my list. You tell.
I forgot to mention it, but it's worth mentioning because it is supposedly archaeological evidence for chastity belts. They decide that she probably was buried in the 16th century. Okay. But pieces of this grave have disappeared, so this is why this is complicated. Things got lost in the First World War. But it's discovered in 1899, and the woman has a metal device on around.
Metal and leather.
Yeah. It's on her hips, and they go, oh my gosh, here we go. It's actual archaeological evidence of a woman who was killed by a chastity belt. The thing is, later people have looked at this thing and decided that it's probably actually a surgical device. She seems to have fallen and broken her hip, and it's an attempt to save her. It obviously didn't work, but it was an attempt to deal with a broken hip in the 17th century.
Thank you for adding that.
A for effort, F for confusing later people who were desperately looking for evidence of naughty things.
When chastity belts show up in the news, sometimes things have gone, you know, really wrong. Like I think it was the Biloxi Bridge. Somebody locked a chastity belt onto the Biloxi Bridge and everybody got upset about that because it was really disgusting and tacky. Or sometimes, you know, somebody will be going through the airport security, beep, 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 because you're knowing you have it. There you are showing up on the x-ray with your chastity belt. It's no good. What I'm going to leave you with, and Michelle had found this first, but I'm going to tell you about this. I'll leave you with the last bit of information on ransomware chastity belts. In January of 2021, a Bluetooth-enabled sex toy got hacked. It was a chastity device that was controlled through Bluetooth for locking or unlocking. So someone else from afar could lock and unlock things, and the hacker did. The hacker locked them, didn't they? So it had a companion app. And earlier in October of 2020, so, you know, more than a year before, researchers had discovered that it was vulnerable to attack because it didn't require authentication. The cyber attacker would lock the devices and then require about $750 worth of Bitcoin to get your genitals unlocked. And some people, this is one of my favorite parts, some people, it happened to them several times. Meaning that they didn't stop after they'd been hacked once or even twice.
Oh my goodness gracious.
God love them. And you couldn't cut these things off. You would need an angle grinder, and your private parts would be in danger, so that wasn't any good. You could unlock it with a screwdriver, but that would void the warranty, and you didn't want that, did you? But you could get a hold of support, and support would unlock and reset it from afar. And nobody actually paid the ransom, so everybody got out of it. And the company then did fix the problem. So that's very nice. And so you want to know about that now, because if you're going to buy any of these companies' products, you want to know that they fixed the problem and that from afar, your toys, your electronic toys that you're wearing on your genitals are not going to get hacked. Now, the newer versions, you know, like the updated versions of it's called the Cellmate, by the way, this device, it's about $150. And they have other Bluetooth control devices too that do other things. many other things, actually, and they're all controlled by Bluetooth, and you can get them. And so there you are. Chastity belts did not exist in the Middle Ages. We invented them, and we said the Middle Ages invented them, and then we used them for other purposes. And the ones we said that they had been, we used them for other purposes than the ones we said they had been invented for. And then because we could, we hooked them up to the internet. The end.
I'm totally, totally shocked to discover that the same culture that has a reality show called Sex Sent Me to the ER, that we're actually responsible for chastity belts.
Yeah, of course.
I have seen this show with my mom.
Your mom watches Sex Sent Me to the ER?
She did. I don't know that she does now, but now she's really strongly into a cowboy phase. But she did watch Sex Sent Me to the ER. The people in them, I mean, can you imagine not only doing the dumb thing that got you sent to the ER, but then agreeing to talk about it on television and reenact pieces of it?
That's the line for me. That's the line for me. I totally understand doing a stupid thing and having to go to the ER. Putting it on reality television there, I don't understand.
But some of these things, you know, 2.5 seconds of thought, like the one guy who decided to propose by putting the ring around his dick, like,
oh, that's not a good idea.
Not a good idea.
No, fingers are too small to make that work for long.
Because he got aroused and then it was stuck.
It was stuck.
My God, they had to call the firefighters in with a bolt cutter and there was anxiety all around.
I would think so. I'm having anxiety just hearing about it and I don't even have those parts.
So, holy smokes. I mean, we are so dumb, but this is who we are. This is who we are.
This is who we are. Yeah, and the next time that you hear from us, we actually will be talking about something that did happen, although it's really almost as unbelievable. One of Henry the First's daughters tried to kill him with a crossbow. So, you know, this has been True Crime and Evil, where the crimes are just like they are today, only with less technology. You can find us on Spotify and Apple Podcast and all the places where the podcasts are hanging out. And you can go to truecrimemedieval.com. True Crime Medieval is all one word. And there are links to the podcast there and also the show notes and the transcriptions, which we get up onto the site as soon as we can. And you can reach us there. You can leave comments and you can get a hold of us there. And yeah, those are all the things that we have to say today, I'm pretty sure. You got anything else to say, Michelle?
Nope, but that's it. Go off and tell your friends that chastity belts did not exist.
But you can buy them on Amazon.
We have invented them because of who we are. But medieval people did not have them because of who they were.
Yeah. Bye.
Bye.